The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim Deal Double G. And I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects at Agent underscore 70.
What's up, everybody?
We also have at PCN underscore Dirt.
Hi, Mom.
And we have at Roddy Cat.
Welcome to the show.
Well, now I am spooked.
Make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles, comic book news, and reviews. On the homepage, you can find links to our social media accounts. We're on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram's coming soon. Oh, and also Google Plus. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, YouTube.
We're all over that.
We are part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to cspn.us. Do it today. And remember, you can buy Comic Book Chronicle merchandise from the CSPN shop. Go to shop.cspn.us. So this week we had a couple of comic book series come to ends, and one of the favorites here on the Comic Book Chronicles was The Vision from Tom King. Tom King, Gabriel Walter, Jordi Belair. So with that in mind, we figured we'd start the show off with the review of the final issue, The Vision number 12.
A showstopper? If not the issue stopper, I don't know.
It's a great culmination of a great series.
It seemed kind of neat wrapping up.
Well,
kind of.
Well, it was one of those endings where it's like everything basically that happened, I pretty much assumed was what was going to happen, yeah. Especially with what we saw in Champions with the character and like someone was missing. So it's like, okay, well, I bet, you know. But
that was kind of a downer.
Yeah, but the way it was done, though, is... You can tell the ending that everybody's expecting. The twist comes with how well you tell it.
Right.
And that's true. What this book has always been about, is the crafting of the storytelling. My only gripe with this series really is that the artwork at certain times seems a little off. It looks a little too cartoony sometimes when they're doing the just regular people. And that's like the tiniest little nitpick, that like the one thing I can hold out and say, okay, well, maybe that needed a little more polish. Everything else was top shelf the entire way through. So when the ending plays out the way you expect, it's not that you were so smart you figured it out. It's that the story is logical and makes sense. And it's leading to a point. So when you get to that ending point, like, yes, this is what we were expecting. But the tone of it, I didn't shed a tear, but I felt bad. You know what I mean? It's like I wasn't like crying on myself because I don't want to get watermarks on my comics and make them, worthless. But but it's just so well done and so well told. I mean, this is one, I have all the issues. I'm still going to buy the trade.
Yes.
If it comes out in hardcover, I'm still going to buy the hardcover.
This is going to be one of those trades that pops to near the top of the gifting list. Mm-hmm. Like if you happen to know someone who's like, oh, you know, what's good in comics, what's popping in comics, say, you know what, here's a trade of this.
Read that. Let me be clear about what I said. While I did say it seemed kind of neatly wrapped up, that doesn't mean it wasn't good. So
yeah, well, that's kind of what I was trying to reiterate. Yeah.
Right. Like kind of what, you know, just to double back to what Doug was saying. Yeah, it was kind of ruined. The ending of this was kind of ruined somewhat by revelations of the team lineup in Champions, and some of the other books that have come out over the last month or so. But if you're not reading that and you don't know what exactly is going on and all you're reading is Vision, then there is just a nice there is a nice conclusion to everyone's story arc in this, including, spoiler alert, the dog. So, yes. You know, that was a nice little wrap up. I like the role that Wanda plays in this issue,
which I thought that part was kind of weird.
Oh,
I'm not saying it was a bad weird, because I'm like, okay, wait, Wanda's talking to Viv. So basically Viv's talking to her mom in a sense.
Well, that, and also I would say that it's very much so like, you know, a little bit more like a Modern Family, you know, like speaking to her dad's ex-wife, you know, who's still kind of close to the family.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, I found that to be a nice little touch. I thought that there are a few, you know, kind of, I guess what Doug was saying earlier, how everything kind of wrapped up very logically.
Who's this Doug you keep talking about? I don't know any Doug. What is this?
PCN underscore dirt. I apologize for breaking, for going kayfabe. Is it kayfabe?
Breaking kayfabe.
Breaking kayfabe. That's it. I apologize for... for speaking in reality as opposed to the mock reality that we enter onto the show. But what PCN underscore Dirt was saying, what Dirt was saying, is that very much so the story wraps up logically, and there's actually a nice little callback to one of the artifacts, I would call it, that's in the Vision's home that King introduced earlier on in the series, and it comes back to play a role.
Right. Right, and just like I think I said this last time we talked about this book, it was like that was kind of the one thing that hadn't up until now, and now we see where that gets played.
Right.
Yeah, because that's another great thing about the story is that you can tell everything that happened was something that was meticulously planned out. It wasn't, you know, some writers, they start a story and the story kind of wanders around and, you know, they're like, oh, well, I thought maybe it was going to go six issues instead of went eight or something. Like, you can tell he... you know, probably had post-it notes and string on the bulletin board and, you know, it looked like a murder investigation of all his different plot threads and, you know, where things were going to come in and work together. So every tiny thing that was introduced or got a moment of attention was there for a specific purpose at some point, even if it took all 12 issues for it to finally play out.
Right. I mean, that's old school. Like, it broke down that way over the course of 12 issues. I mean, that's like the classic for anyone who's a fan of Marvel Superhero Secret Wars and remembers how that broke down over the course of 12 issues. It's nice to see this story really, like Dirt said, be paced well enough to last all 12 issues and really have impact even into the last issue.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen it relatively recently with certain writers, with like, say, you know, the Hickman stuff back in the day, and Slott with some of his Spidey stuff, where they're kind of in for the long haul and just kind of throw stuff in there that'll pop back up later on for great effect.
Right, they have the benefit of the long-form storytelling, of being able to utilize long-form storytelling.
So, we'll definitely be probably revisiting this at the year-end, it's safe to say, right?
Yes.
I can add that to my year-end notes I've kind of been keeping up with throughout the year.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
So what was that going happening at the end of the issue?
kind of. That's kind of what's going on at the end of the issue, without spoiling anything.
He's doing what the modern American family does, is trade up for a better wife.
Rebuild.
Oh, my goodness. He's looking for his own Sofia Vergara, right? I don't watch the show, but I know that she's supposed to be the second wife of Ed O'Neill's character on that show.
I've watched that show once.
Like I said, that's about as much as I know about it, so...
So we had some other final issues from Marvel, I believe, right?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, Ultimates number 12 also as well.
Oh, I didn't get to this.
I didn't finish it.
I finished it before the show.
Nice. Dirt, where's yours?
Oh, yeah. You know, I read this like 6 months ago, so I've already forgotten what happened. So why don't you go ahead and discuss it without me and I'll tell you.
Oh, mercy.
Let me pull up my quick little jotted down notes. So... as you see, it's a Civil War, has a Civil War II trade dressing on it, if you're watching the YouTube video stream at the moment.
Should we have done Civil War VI before that? No,
because as I was going to say before, even though this has a Civil War II trade dress, it takes place after Civil War II has ended.
Right.
After the whole series has ended.
Wait, but Civil War II hasn't ended.
That is correct.
Well, that sounds like a real problem.
Kind of happened for a couple of years.
Well, I mean, Marvel Now has begun, and Infamous Iron Man's come out, so...
Although it's not as bad as last year at this time.
So, the issue begins with the Connor Sims, the anti-monitor, anti-matter, whatever his name is.
Anti-Man.
Yeah. He appears like he's lost and like sort of tumbling through different dimensions. Like he starts off in like space and goes through like another dimension and then another dimension, and he comes across Eternity, who's in chains, and he's kind of like babbling to himself, like, you know, maybe Eternity's always been in chains. And then he's caught by Galactus, the Lifebringer, and the book is bookended by Connor Sims and Galactus. So beginning, it begins with them, and then the issue ends with them. So to just complete that little part of the story, at the end of the issue, it appears that Galactus turns Connor Sims into his new life herald, which he sends him off, and he says he needs the Ultimates. And as we learn in the story, in the middle of the comic, the Ultimates have disbanded because... we should have read... Civil War 2. I forgot about that. So in Civil War 2, number 6, which we'll get to...
Like, Tim was going so fast.
We'll get to after. The Ultimates disband.
Oh, and by the way, everybody's dead. So,
T'Challa ends up betraying Captain Marvel in Civil War 2, number 6, which also came out this week. And then... There's vague references to the end of the Civil War between the heroes. The Triskelion is destroyed. What else happened? Oh, so Alpha Flight still remains, but the Ultimates are no more. The government disbands them.
Carol's out, I believe.
Yeah.
They took her from her spot.
Yeah, and as you mentioned earlier, the guy that's been sort of in the shadows monitoring the Ultimates for the government has some like secret team called.
Which is made up of new universe characters that we figured who it was.
Oh, seriously?
You figured who it was? I have no clue who these people were.
So basically, the Troubleshooters. If you know about your new universe continuity and you know the name Troubleshooters, you kind of get it.
Okay.
Because it's pretty much a version of them.
Okay.
So they're like the super team that works in the shadows. Is how they're built. Compared to Robert DaCosta, aka Sunspot's Avengers team, which is going to be the public face. So they're referenced by name because there's somewhat synergy between Al Ewing's two Avengers team.
Wait,
books.
You're saying the US Avengers? Or
I think that's who that guy was referring to, the US Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and Boy is also a character from New Universe also, or at least a version of, so...
You could tell Al Ewing is cooking up something big because in this and then New Avengers 17 that also came out this week, there's lots of talks of a war coming, even though we just left a war in Civil War 2 that no one has enjoyed. But something tells me at least I'm more hopeful that whatever next big event crossover that he's building up to, maybe if he's the showrunner of it, it'll be a lot better. Mm-hmm.
One kind I was of about to say, hell, we got a couple because we got the Inhuman or the X-Men thing or whatever he's doing. So there's...
Yeah, there's that war coming up. There's the Shi'ar Asgardian war.
Oh, that's right.
And Mighty Thor.
Yep.
Lots of wars. But so even though the Ultimates are no more, Galactus is going to have to recruit them to go on a cosmic mission in Ultimates Squared.
So is this like the Player 2 version of Galactus? Is he bright orange in this book, or is that just the cover?
He looks just like he does on the cover.
Mm-hmm. Blinged out Galactus, I think, as we once called him.
He's this is Lifebringer Galactus.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we can jump to Civil War 2, number 6 now, since I spoiled a little bit of it.
A little.
It's not even like the important stuff I spoiled.
Yeah.
So.
And to be fair, because of the fact that Civil War 2 has been behind, some of this
can't be helped.
Can't be helped. Yeah.
So they stand around and talk about.
That's the whole issue, right there, folks.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
They stand around and talk. They talk about. They stand around and talk about the vision that Ulysses projected of Spider-Man killing Captain America, as you see on the cover if you're watching the video feed.
Right. That's not spoiling anything. Come on, though.
somehow Thor took Spider-Man away, but yet still was back in time to teleport away with Doctor Strange. If anyone noticed that little visual error,
I don't think she came that. I don't think she went that far, to be honest.
Yeah, and she really they weren't. Yeah, Strange is really that far from. I don't think where they. Cause it seemed like they were up there close anyway. And hell, she can open portals. It's not like it's out of the realm of possibilities.
She can't create portals, can she?
I mean, she could. Yeah,
I think she literally just dropped them off like downtown, Manhattan, because that's what the skyline just kind of evokes. So she didn't go very far from the battle site and came back.
Because Miles was kind of ready to just get up off.
Right. So
Captain Marvel wanted to arrest Spider-Man. Captain America said no.
Steve.
They let Spider-Man go.
Yeah, Cap. Steve Rogers, Cap. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. We got some more talking at the Tony Stark's bunker that he's borrowing from Nick Fury. Because anytime you need a bunker, you just use an old shield or Hydra base. It's always the go-to. What else happened to this? That's about it, really.
Well, there's a couple things that...
There's a little bit with the Guardians, but that's not much. And there was T'Challa talking with Tony about why he switched sides. But
right, which was very... Oh, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Roddy. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I was going to say, T'Challa, basically, it came down to, I'm going to be on Captain America, Steve Rogers' side, because that's the right side.
Right. I was just like, oh, man. Normally, yeah, I'd be cheering. Yeah, exactly. Normally, I would be cheering this to no end. But obviously, since I know what else is going on, I'm just like, oh. Couldn't have been at a worse time, right?
Right.
So, yeah. but I'm glad that you brought that up. I just wanted to add a few things. Like Roddy said, there's a scene with the Guardians. There's also a couple of scenes that have played out in other books, a.k.a. Champions and a.k.a. some of the all-new, all-different Avengers, where the younger members of the Avengers kind of branch out. But this time, Riri Williams is aboard for this.
Yeah, I'm like, where did she come from?
Right, because I don't think she was there in all-new, all-different Avengers when they were showing this, right? So,
yeah. But even if this is that exact moment, because this is basically, well, I guess this is, yeah, I don't know. See, that's
exactly because the timeline's all screwed up. Exactly.
Yeah.
The flow is all screwed up. I wanted to add is, one of the ongoing jokes that, I know you guys all love is the facial hair bro thing still going on full force.
Yes.
Whatchamacallit. What else? I think I had some. Oh, there was a Guardians thing where there's a little where there's just a two panel sequence that kind of hints at some of the discord that's happening in Guardians,
which also came out this week.
Right,
Star-Lord showing some too much attention to Captain Marvel.
Right. Let's see if there's anything else that I need to mention. Oh, and obviously we have a cliffhanger ending.
It ends where.
Which I like that shot. That was a cool shot. It seemed kind of seemed kind of weird.
Yeah, it did seem kind of weird.
But it was a nice shot.
Yeah. So, without spoiling too much, we basically come full circle. We'll leave it at that. And let me just bring up Captain America, Steve Rogers, number 6. I don't know if anyone else read this. But basically, the storytelling in this issue ran virtually parallel to what was happening in Civil War 2, number 6. And I wish, for goodness sake, someone would have told me that would have happened. I would have read Civil War 2, number 6 first. The only real difference is there's a lot more of the in-between stuff. Obviously, there's a number of plot lines and story, points that Spencer's developing in this to go along with the Hydra Cap story. And a number of things get developed. There's a little bit more of his upbringing that has been kind of molded by Kobik, what's been changed. There is a nice little sequence between Captain America and Steve Rogers and Tony Stark where some of the seeds of doubt are sown. Cap does this on purpose, obviously. And there's also a great sequence, and I definitely recommend reading some of the panels where Rick Jones, I believe it's just the page. Rick Jones is on a S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier, and he is basically speaking all of the doubts. He's vocalizing all of the doubts that we've had about the story. And he mentions Minority Report by title, by name. And he comes out and says, hasn't anyone watched this? Doesn't anyone know how this ends? So it's kind of funny that, you know, when we found out what the premise of the story was, that was immediately where we all went. And it's taken, you know, a while for someone to actually address that in the comics themselves. And to, you know, it's kind of a meta, it's kind of a meta commentary on the whole thing.
Alrighty.
I guess you want to keep the Civil War II train going?
Let's go.
Might as well.
So let's get to one that's kind of loosely connected. All New, All Different, Avengers number 15. Excuse me. So here we have a nice little convenient story.
Yeah.
Because we have Thor going to Asgard to seek Heimdall's help to try to figure out, you know, where she stands in the Civil War II conflict. He conveniently has a story about Odin's son, a beginning of Avengers story, like in the early days of the Avengers story, that coincidentally has something to do with a similar issue and having to do with Doctor Doom, which I'm not gonna lie, as I got to that part, I'm like, wait, did something like this actually happen, or like this is something they cooked up? Like, I don't remember Doom fighting the Avengers that early on. And maybe they did. I still haven't really found anything concrete on that one. But regardless, like I said, Heimdall's recalling this story about, you know, the Dr. Doom. Basically, the Avengers, the original Avengers, like, after Cap showed up, but not too far after that, and Giant Man was Giant Man. It was around that era.
Yeah, it was before Kooky Quartet.
Exactly. So basically, Dr. Doom was causing some issues around Latveria and a neighboring kind of country. And the Avengers were like, well, we need to go and try to stop this. But they were kind of having an issue whether they should do that or not, kind of similar to Civil War II, you know, about whether we should, you know, I'll tell you what, that's not the part, but whether they should do that or not. Thor's like, okay, if we need to seek some counsel, I know where to go. So they go see Heimdall, who apparently has, well, and not even apparently, but who has the ability to see through the future as well as, you know, all through time and space. So, and after some coaxing, Heimdall actually told them the outcome of what could happen. He also told them, because Thor was basically trying to get him to do it because he didn't want to look bad in front of the Avengers, basically. And Heimdall at first wasn't trying to do it because, you know, once he sees something in the future, it stays locked. So Heimdall finally told him he saw the future, you know, he looked into the future, saw that they could win, but, you know, it wasn't going to be a complete victory. Then we cut to Heimdall sending them to the battle. They battle Doom. They end up winning, but Doom, as Doom does, kind of has a backup plan, or has a plan in place.
Or ulterior motive, right, exactly.
Exactly, which the Avengers played into in all of the guests, and he ends up, while he lost the battle, he ends up winning what he was trying to do, which leaves the Avengers kind of, you know, sore because of this. And from that, Thor and Heimdall, you know, we cut back to the present or presentation, you know, Thor and Heimdall is talking a little bit. And Heimdall says something which I thought was kind of strange, was that he was like, well, I'll look into the future. Like, he knows, you know, he knows Jane Foster's predicament, and he would tell her how much time she has left if she wanted to know, which, to which she did not do, because obviously, you know, going by what he said about, you know, things becoming locked, you know, it would have been the case. So this seemed like it might be setting up something else, but that's pretty much the way this book ends, is that, no, I'm going to do it. And then Heimdall tells him something of like, hey, you got a battle, you know, some battles ahead for you, making it sound like you still got a good bit of time left without actually saying anything.
Right.
And then that's pretty much where the book ends, you know. So, like I said, it was, I'm like, that's a convenient, real convenient story for the time. And I guess that last part may be shooting off something else in her book. I don't know, because I haven't been reading it. But this seems like this is the end of All New, All Different, I'm assuming.
Right. To be honest, it almost felt like, had it not been for the flashback Avengers story, it felt like an issue of Thor. And it really could have been a story told in the pages of Thor. But but I agree that last bit is probably prescient. It's probably a real tease for a development in the Thor book down the road, probably not too far along. It's probably going to be coming sooner rather than later.
Right.
One thing we should probably also point out was this week was the final issue of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, was it? Oh,
yeah. So anyone who's fallen behind on that, well, now you can catch up.
Yeah.
This is it.
It goes off with the whimper? Or did anyone actually read it?
I hadn't read it yet.
There's way too much stuff out this week. And it's been like that for a few weeks now.
It's like I know what's going on recently in that book, and it is loosely tied into Civil War, but it's kind of more they're in their own little section.
Okay. And New Avengers number 17 was also a Secret Wars 2 tie-in. So we learned a lot this issue.
A lot.
We learned how the Maker made it over from the Ultimate Universe. Well, I actually survived the Secret Wars universe, I should say, because he went from Ultimate Universe to Secret Wars to
Marvel Nowiverse.
A.K.A. Earth Prime. And I had a question, like, so I guess the spoiler bell can go off quite quickly. We learned that Owen Reese sort of split the Maker up, and there's a Maker in every multiverse, every Earth or universe in the multiverse, which
anyway, because there's a bunch of Reed Richards.
Yeah, that just dawned on me. Like, there should be a duplicate of everyone on every Earth. But besides except the fact,
even him. Yeah,
no matter. Yeah, even him. But he called Owen Reese the Demiurge.
Demiurge,
however you say it. Demiurge.
Oh, weird.
Isn't that what they call Wiccan?
Yeah, in the future.
Very interesting.
Wait, wasn't that the guy who sang "To the Beat of the Rhythm of the Night"?
No. Oh no! Shout out to Elder Barge.
And then later in the issue, when the Maker is discussing Whisper, he name drops Nadia Pym for some reason.
Oh, because that's something that has Whisper's kind of been name dropped in all different Avengers also with, because the last issue, I believe it was, she and Janet got attacked by a couple of Whisper agents.
Right.
By some Whisper agents.
And they may be the antagonist in the Astonishing
Wasp.
Yeah. Unstoppable Wasp. Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Maybe it may sound like she was a sleeper agent for the Whisper.
They want her for something, so we don't,
Oh, okay. But besides the fact, so we learn Sunspot isn't dead. He's the grand puppet master, pulling all the strings. We find out Dumb Duggan, his original body is still around.
Huh. Well, we sort of knew that, and I think this is a twist on that.
I thought he died, and they just were keeping him alive. Yeah, he originally died in the past, and then the one that was before pre-Secret Wars, the one that was running around was just a LMD that didn't know he was an LMD.
Thanks, Original Sin.
Oh, that's right. So they tweaked that story.
Yeah, they tweaked it, but now they've tweaked it again.
Exactly. A little bit of retroactive continuity there, people.
And he's actually could still be brought back in his original body, I guess. But
Wait, is this going to tie into Clone Conspiracy?
Oh, I knew that. That was exactly where I was going, what I was thinking.
And we see Sunspot uses powers, which hasn't happened in a while.
Yeah, because of Impox, he wasn't using them.
Yeah, every time he uses it, it takes time off of whatever his life expectancy.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I'll be glad when this awful Impox business ends.
If.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we have to wait to see how IVX plays out.
Goodness. IV.
Yeah. Fun deal. I was about to say, who thought back in the days of new mutants that Roberto DaCosta would be this kind of a figure?
Yeah, I know, right? I like it, though.
No, it's nice.
Yeah, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's nice that, so many of these New Mutants characters have kind of graduated. You know, we saw both of them take a lead role during Infinity, if you recall.
Yep.
So, you know, like, who's left on the New Mutants roster that kind of needs that kind of spotlight? We've seen...
Danny Moonstone? Moonstar?
Yeah, she played a higher role as a graduate into the X-Men, onto the X-Men level. So did Wolfsbane. You know, she also did. So I guess they were the last two.
Cypher? Except for...
Yeah, except for dying. Except for dying.
I thought he brought him back.
Cypher wasn't he in All New X-Factor?
I think they brought him back. I can't, because I remember seeing something about that. I don't know why. All
right. Well,
might be.
Either way.
Yeah, in any event.
It's
a fun issue. One more to go before it ends as well. It's loosely tied to Civil War II.
Mm-hmm.
Just because when the story arc began, it was more tied.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it, at least for the Civil War two books I read this week.
I just kind of skimmed through Guardians.
Okay.
And this is basically at the event, at the end of last issue, Gamora finds out that Thanos is on Earth, and she's none too pleased about that. She tries to go after him. Carol tries to stop him. They have a nice little drag-out fight, all the while talking. It looks like it ends with basically...
blood?
They come to, I guess, yeah, basically they come to well, they don't even come to a standstill. They just stop talking, and then Gamora finds out that Quill knew, and that's when she's like, okay, I'm done. Tell Quill I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going away with him. Then she kicks the shit out of Carol. And then we cut to Peter talking to the to everybody else. And then it seems that they found out that Quill knows, and they all seem to go their separate ways. And it appears at the end of the book, we have some negative zone activity having to do with Thanos being on Earth. And yeah.
Okay. The only other book I have that's on the periphery of Civil War II is Totally Awesome Hulk number 11.
Hmm.
And this was actually, honestly, you guys really should be reading this. If you're not, all of our listeners and fans of the show, if you're not reading Totally Awesome Hulk, I think it's some of the best stuff that Greg Pak has done in the Marvel Universe to date, because it's really, I think a well crafted story that, like I said, is on the periphery of Civil War II, because, you know, obviously one of the characters, the previous Hulk, Bruce Banner, meets his supposed untimely demise in the pages of Civil War II. So we're dealing with some of the ramifications of that in the Totally Awesome Hulk book. When we last saw, you know, in the last issue, we saw the Black Panther Hulkbuster armor taking on the Totally Awesome Hulk, and they basically fought to stalemate. And in the meantime, one of the ongoing storylines in Totally Awesome Hulk, which is the Hulk going after monsters, pops up in this issue, and Amadeus' sister Maddie is trying to focus on that mission while Amadeus is engaging with T'Challa in hand-to-hand combat. But ultimately, what we find is that, you know, there's a couple of things Amadeus still needs to learn about being a superhero, and his high-level intellect and his newfound superpowers don't necessarily mean that he's the be-all and end-all of superheroing, and that he is prone to making mistakes, and he does need help. And that's where we leave at the end of the issue. It's like I said, it's really well done. It really is a little bit deeper than just, you know, fist to jaw action.
Just out of curiosity, does Hawkeye actually show up in this issue?
No.
Of course he doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. God forbid you have a bunch of arrows getting smashed on the cover, and you know he doesn't show.
Well, actually, this kind of goes into, speaking of Totally Awesome Hulks, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 12, actually.
Oh, I didn't get a chance to read that yet. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's fine. So, Kid Creek professes his love to Lunella. She's not trying to have it. All she's trying to do, you know, is change her world. And basically, the main thing on her mind at this point is the Lego competition that is forthcoming. And
you said Lego?
Yeah. They specifically say Lego.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. They
paid
the license.
What?
So basically, so the last couple of issues has been about this. Well, not have been about, but it came up with a few issues ago about this Lego competition that her class has been entered into. And, she's been trying to focus on that because she's been trying to do anything that's, that set her apart from and getting her into a better school and better place than the school she is now. So she's basically using that composition to get people to see that, hey, she's real smart, which we found out how smart she is near the end of this. But like I said, Kid Creek professes his love. She's not having it. They seem to come to an understanding about that. Then they go to the competition, but in the midst of the competition, so her powers kick in, which means her brain switches with Devil Dinosaurs, and it seems to be like when she gets real nervous or something. I don't know. It's weird how that kind of happened, and they haven't really dealt that out yet. So Devil Dinosaur and her body starts to kind of have issues. Right then, the Kree attack, which is Kid Kree's dad and the other people that were coming to get her and him, or to get her, rather, because he went out, because Kid Kree kind of initially came after her, but then found himself having feeling for her. There was a little bit of a fight between all of them. Lunella has this secret project, which we get to see, which is basically a Lego Triceratops battle suit. Or exoskeleton, as you would, and apparently she had this plan all along, you know, for when her body switches again. So basically, she as Devil Dinosaur grabs her body, puts it into the exoskeleton, and it gets strapped in and does its thing. And they're all fighting like the Kree for a little while until that happens. Until the battle is over, and Kid Kree is like, "No, you can't take her because I love her and this and that other." And Lunella's still like, "No, I don't belong to you, and I'm not, you know. I'm not trying to hear nothing you have to say about that. So go find go do something with your own life. I got to take care of mine." So the Kree leave, and then
we start on the road to a new storyline.
We pretty much do, because this is when the Totally Awesome Hulk comes in after Lunella's kind of sitting there feeling upset because she lost the competition because of all of that happening, even though her invention in the first place, not the secret one, you know, was the one that seemed to be the front runner. So Amadeus comes up, and, you know, gives her this, what looks like a joystick, and says that, hey, we're friends. I need you to, check this out and solve this, which she does, like, really quick, which prompts Amazelius to pretty much say, and apparently this thing was something that Bruce had. And I'm not sure what it is or if it's actually come up anywhere or not, but because of the fact that she solved it really quick, makes her ends up making her the smartest person in the universe, or on the earth,
mm-hmm.
at this point, which I know the writer has been saying that's, you know, what she is supposed to be. But, and I guess that they were leaning towards this. Now, as Agent 7 just said, this looks like goes into a new arc, to which we don't get too much on, but
right. We've gotten some news on this in, in releases from Marvel and from, the writer and, you know, the co-writers on this. And, the last page of this, the next, is actually the cover, I guess, of the next issue, which is the print right. that I got at New York Comic Con, which is Moon Girl with the
various interventions.
What did you call it? The machine, the Goldberg.
Goldberg machine. Rube Goldberg. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes.
So this is going into that. You know, we're diving headlong into the story that tells and explains how Moon Girl is in fact the smartest person in the Marvel Universe now, especially in the void left by Reed Richards and Tony Stark.
Mm. So I was about to say,
and Bruce Banner. I forgot,
Yeah, and I was about to say, because before this, Amadeus was like eighth,
right?
And since half of them are not alone, does that make him like what, sixth, fifth?
He's probably moved up to something in that range, right?
Yeah.
You know, Doom is still around, obviously. So he may have ascended to number one. But all that being said, I'm enjoying this book. I'm glad that I had a chance to skim it while Roddy cut to the chase on some of the Kid Kree stuff. And it's nice to see that they're moving forward with this, the storyline about Lunella being the smartest person in the Marvel U, or at least on the Marvel U Earth, is moving forward now.
Yeah, like I've also been enjoying this book for that.
Cool. All right. Did anyone read this? This basically covers the last of my books. I wouldn't even get to Rapid Fire because all I've got left is Ms. Marvel number 12.
Ah,
anyone read that? You read that?
Yes.
All right.
So, yes, I read it.
So I'm going to say up front, I did not get to the backup story. This is the last thing. Yeah.
Yeah, there was. It was a Red Widow backup story.
Right.
Just in case anyone wanted a physical copy.
Right. Just in case anyone wanted to. Cool. Yeah. In our preview copy, we got it.
Really?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
So, but
you read this, right, Tim?
Yeah, and I finished the story. I must have just thought I got to the end, and I was like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, right. It's like an exit. Yeah, exactly. So, this was a very intriguing look into what it's like for a first generation American to go back to the homeland. And I can speak to this on a very personal level. This very much resonated with me. You know, and it very much felt like my own travels back. So when I read this, I couldn't help but smile and just think of how similar all of our experiences are when we when first generation Americans do this particular pilgrimage.
Yeah, I don't have I don't have that tattoo, but I also enjoyed the story because it was like it's Miss Marvel has been a book that I've always enjoyed because it kind of is also touching and sometimes action filled, and it just kind of makes you feel some things, and this was no exception. So I enjoyed it.
Well, Kamala's on a kind of a soul searching mission at this point because of the events of I guess this is pre-Champions, but because of the events of Civil War II and her fallout with Captain Marvel. You know, she's gone to and dealing with some of the personal issues with her on again, off again, somewhat, you know, best buddy Bruno and partial love interest, I guess. But you know, what we end up dealing with now is her kind of coming to grips with the fact that her superheroing, as much as it's a part of her, isn't all, you know, isn't everything that you know, isn't everything to her, and she's trying to kind of find some of those missing pieces to her life. That's, you know, it's very much a finding yourself type of trip for her, and she ends up running into some issues that need superheroing, but maybe not her brand of superheroing.
Right. We are introduced to a new character named Kareem, which before they said his name, I honestly thought was a girl, but because you see him and he's got his long hair, but regardless, but yeah, we're introduced to Kareem, who's living with her family, and they have a little interaction to their point. There was there was a part after the superheroing part where these two see each other again. Did you get the sense that they kind of knew who each other were after? Because there was like one look that kind of
possibly yeah. Because what's teased in this is that Kamala goes back, and this is Karachi, Pakistan, and you know, apparently there are some issues going on with some local some local bandits dealing with water shortages, and one of the local heroes called Red Dagger appears and kind of intervenes and tries to, at least, you know, it's kind of a pseudo team up, and what we're led to believe, spoiler alert.
And while we don't know who this person is, we get a sense of who this
person
is.
We definitely have there's a strong tease as to who this character, what this character's secret identity is. We'll put it that way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I got to the, I guess the end page where it's, you know, next issue, and I just assumed that was the end of the issue.
Yeah.
I see the backup now.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Which, again, has nothing to do with Ms. Marvel, because this is a Red Widow back up, so which I thought was kind of strange. It was like, why would you not put that in the back of Black Widow's book?
Yeah, but
I
also kind of
see it, yeah. Right? But I kind of can also see it because Red Widow is a young girl, and I guess maybe
differentiate the pull in a different fan base, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Just being that, you know, Kamala's a young girl, and this is a young girl, and I think that book that the writer of that backup story did, the prose novel, you know, yes. I guess is coming off
there's
from
a,
that.
There's a sequel coming out, I think, next year.
Sure is.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I need to read that novel.
Cool.
Yeah, I was kind of, after reading that backup, I was kind of curious about reading it.
You know, I can send it to you.
Okay.
Because I forgot that I have it sitting here.
Prose novel?
Yeah. Nice. Uncorrected advanced proof.
Nice.
I think I have a digital copy myself. I think on my Kindle.
Forever Red.
Nice.
Yep, that's it. Yeah.
How thick is it? Turns out ways. Oh, okay.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Sure.
Let's jump to some DC books this week.
Oh, wait. I have one Marvel.
Go for it, Dirt.
Where is it at? Punisher Annual number 1.
Ah.
Annuals tend to fall into one of two categories. Either it's a big chapter of the ongoing series that's, you know, the ongoing story that's happening in the main book, or it's a standalone, you know, story. And this is a standalone. It is... basically, it feels like filler. The story is just a random kid whose dad was a cop, and cop got gunned down, and now he's looking for revenge, and the guys that he's going after are the same guys Punisher's going after, which is a story that we've gotten in Punisher books before. This one's just a little different because Punisher talks the cop's son out of killing the bad guy so that Punisher can blow him away, so that, you know, this guy's conscience will be clean, but, you know, Punisher doesn't care. But really, I mean, the artwork is not that great. in the book. It feels very rushed in a lot of places. It looks almost like a sketch style artwork. Like they had some unfinished pencils and they just inked the unfinished pencils. So for a $4.99 book with a standalone story that has nothing to do with your ongoing, that's not really all that original, with not great artwork, it was not the happiest annual I've read in a while. So unless you're a collector and you're collecting Punisher and you got to have them all just to complete your collection, otherwise this is completely skippable.
I always feel like annuals are skippable, but maybe that's just me.
You know, it really depends.
Sometimes.
Like, I can remember DC making a big deal before all the hype of doing, like, these theme annuals back in the 90s when annuals were part of the ongoing story, and it was, like, the big, like, it was the big, you know, fulfillment of the storyline and where the storyline for the next year would begin.
Mm-hmm. Or they did, like, an event, you know, that lasted throughout the annuals. Or
right, and yeah, Marvel used to do that, too. I remember, you know, Atlantis Attacks and
of course.
All of that type of stuff where you'd have, like, four different books brought together in the annuals, you know, doing crossovers, you know, that kind of stuff. But nowadays, so many of these are just, like I said, it's filler is what it is. It really, there's nothing that ties it into the series. There's nothing that happens in this that has any sort of long-term effect on the regular book. It's just another story, and they just throw it out there to fill pages and take $5. So, all right, that's all. That's all on that.
Okay, and on that note.
And no one read Prowler? I'm surprised on that one.
No, although I didn't get to it yet.
Yeah, I didn't get to it either. Right. Tried to.
Right, I was about to say, there's just way too much stuff going on, and way too many good books. I just wanted to point out just very quickly, Prowler number one and Doctor Strange, if I presume no one read Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supreme.
Yeah, I read it.
Oh, you did? Okay. So we might transition into that. I wanted to mention that those two were the books that received hip-hop covers, and I'm glad that Dirt was reading my mind. So these two books did receive hip-hop covers this week.
Oh, hold on. Let me go back to you so I can pull them up one more time.
Oh, together, side by side? No problem.
Do you know what either of those albums are?
Nay, I do not. I do not. This is some new school stuff, man.
Got to be.
So I read it. It was fine. It talks about Merlin in the past, assembling sorcerer supremes from across different timelines. You have Sorcerer Supreme of the future, Wiccan, as an adult. You have the young ancient one. You have someone like that's
Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider character, and there's one other person, right?
Yeah, the Nina girl who went on, or woman who I'm not sure who she is, but apparently, you know, she has some tie to Merlin. Did this seem like a Web Warriors thing to you?
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's the closest analog, right?
Kinda.
Got to assemble a team.
Was there Dr. Strayham?
Oh!
Not yet. Oh.
Well, let me know when there is, and then I'll start reading.
I thought the highlight of the book was Javier Rodriguez's art.
Hmm. Yeah, it was good. And there was also something else, because I remember seeing the last Dr. Strange trailer, and there was a part in that where Wong talks about, I think that was Wong that talks about, it's like, yeah, the Avengers, you know, pretty much saved the world. We take care of stuff that is, you know,
they saved the world from the physical threats, and they handled the supernatural.
Right, and that also kind of makes me feel like what this book is.
Like an Avengers book for the magic side? I gotcha.
Yeah, kind of that, between that and Web Warriors, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Let's see, in DC, I'm probably the only one that read the Vigilante Southland number one.
What, you mean Nighthawk in DC?
Well, apparently, I guess this is some like character that's been around for a while.
Yeah, although this is a new incarnation of the character.
Right, because the initial one, we talked about this in news before, was created in New Teen Titans.
Really? Is this the same takeoff as what they're doing on Arrow?
Oh, yeah, he's supposed to show up. Mm-hmm. Is that the same person that's supposed to show up in Arrow?
I don't know the name of this one, but yes, Arrow is.
Vigilante. Yeah. I saw Vigilante.
Vigilante is coming up, and the character's already there. He just hasn't taken costume yet.
But either way, it's I think the character's name's Donnie. He's he's a former basketball player who has become somewhat of a slacker. His girlfriend is an activist who is run down. She's on her bike and she gets run down by some people that want her, basically get her out of their business. And this spurns Donnie to investigate how her death came about. And he's got a father who seems to be in the shady business, but since he's got an ear to the streets, he knows how to get information from people. And it's funny, because his father keeps calling Donnie Young Lion, and it reminded me of Empire and Lucius Lion. But and there's a scene earlier in the issue where Donnie's girlfriend has on the vigilante outfit as she's breaking into a facility, and he ends up finding her whatever those things that he's swinging around in the on the cover there. But that's pretty much the issue. It's just sort of, you know, him investigating what happened to his girlfriend, and I guess you can see he sort of takes up the fight for her. And I think this was a 6-issue limited series.
Yeah. So,
I can safely say that is not the same version as Arrow then, by the way.
So. Yeah, it's a fun issue though. I enjoyed it. Suicide Squad number 5. We learned the answer to why Zod is so huge.
Roids?
No!
I guess you could almost say that. He's roided out on Phantom Zone energy.
Really?
On Phantom Juice.
Yeah, Phantom
Juice. Goodness.
And Amanda Waller is considering adding him to her Suicide Squad, of course. Hack wants to join the group. That's the African woman who they rescued from a Russian facility in the previous issues. The Suicide Squad single issues are easy to read because they're like split in half. It's like you get the Suicide Squad story, and then you get a solo story for an individual member in the back half. And in the back half, it was Hack's story. Not too much here. She's a fan of Harley Quinn, and she wants to join the Suicide Squad. Okay. Let's see.
It just reminded me of something, by the way, real quick. Going back to All New, All Different Avengers, that was a part of that, and I don't know why what you said just reminded me of that. But when they went through the flashback story, there was a part where Iron Man was talking, and of course, this was at the time where he was still saying that he was Tony Stark's bodyguard. Cap says something about Rick Jones' shortwave, and then Iron Man chimes in saying social media.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here like, wait a minute, what the fuck are you, what is this?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't say it like that, but it was like, that's weird.
Sliding Marvel. Like,
why would you do that? And then there was another reference later on that was like, that seems out of place.
That was in the flashback part of the story?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Like both of those instances were in the flashback part. I can't remember the other one right off the bat. I thought it might be in my notes, but. Oh, yeah. Which this could be something else different. I mean, because the word's been around for a while. Like Cap calls Doom a sociopath, you know, which is a word that's kind of have had play in the last few years. But I mean, obviously, it's been around for a while. But I'm like, looks like these are two references that are like seems not to be for that time period. So that's made those weird. But anyway,
Teen Titans number 1 or Teen Titans number 1. So this is John Boy Myers' last issue. He's been the highlight of the series in only 2 issues so far because his art has been fun to see on each panel, on each page. But as far as the story goes, it's Robin has captured the Teen Titan members, and he wants to reform the Teen Titans. Beast Boy takes umbrage to that because Tim Drake, their Red Robin that led Teen Titans, is dead now. But also, Damian just turned 13, so he's, quote-unquote, like, reaching adulthood. And he doesn't have any friends his age. He sees greatness in all the members of the individual members he's recruited. And it's sort of, they break free, of course, and then they get in a little fight. But it's mostly about Damian turned 13 and then wanting to reform the Teen Titans. Not sure why he recruits Stargirl, since she's, like, the oldest of all of them.
I was going to mention that. Starfire.
His age, but whatever.
We know why. I mean, we know why. He just turned 13. I mean, come on. Yeah.
But, and then we see Ra's al Ghul at the end. And, of course, he's going to be the villain going forward that they're taking on.
Sure. Did you see that Teen Titans versus Justice League movie?
I have not. I jotted that down earlier today on my list of things to do, which is I need to watch it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I heard it was.
I remember I watched it when it came out, but I honestly don't remember.
I watched like the first 15 minutes of it. I started it and never finished it.
Yeah, I remember an off part about it, but I'm like, okay, sure. It was kind of fun.
Yeah. Oh, and Titans number 4, I did read right before the show, and
I did too.
It's just more stuff with Kadabra manipulating the team. His main goal is to mess with Wally West, and that he does that by kidnapping Linda Park. In the pre-New 52 universe, Linda was Wally's anchor to their world. So if he, you know, as Flash characters tend to do, they can run too fast and lose their grip on their world and, you know, get lost in the Speed Force and all that good stuff. But now a loved one always pulls them back. And for Wally, it was Linda. So if Linda, but the problem is this Linda Park has no association with Wally because she doesn't know who he is. So Kadabra's theory is Wally doesn't have an anchor to the world anymore. So if he runs really fast, he'll disappear and never come back again.
Hmm.
So he spread the Titans across three cities. Like two of them are in Gotham, two are in Metropolis, two are in Coast City. And he's like, you have to pick which ones to save. And Wally's like, I'm going to save them all. And of course, he's probably going to run fast and maybe disappear and then come back next. And that'll all be next issue.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
This, yeah. I don't know, this story is...
It's dragging.
Yeah, well, not only that, but it's like Kadabra seems way overpowered for as low-level a villain as he is. And the fact that he's sitting there going, oh, well, Pop, now you're 200 miles away. You know, Pop, now I made clones of you, and now I'm going to make them twice as powerful, like Power Rangers, where it's just like, if you could turn them into the giant that stomps the city, why didn't you do that in the first place?
Right.
Like, I can make clones of all the Titans, but now I'm going to make them twice as strong. Well, then just do that first. Why wait until they fail?
Well, an issue or two ago, they did mention how he was super powered or whatnot, I think.
It's like future technology. He's got technology from the future, and to us it looks like magic.
And he's like the descendant of possibly a Watchman. But he said like the watch he was using was like his great-great-grandfather.
Oh, yeah. And it looked like, the one that Dr. Manhattan took apart and put back together. But I don't know. Like, I'm just reading this story, and there are just so many times where it just felt like, I'm going to throw something else at you just to make the story that much longer. I could have done it last issue and just, you know, killed you right then and there, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. One of those type things.
I kind of felt that reading this too. It's like, okay, can we get past this?
And the real like draw is I want more Secrets of Rebirth that appeared in this Titans book early on. And we're getting out of, let's see, now there's been 5 issues if you include the Rebirth. And there have been like 3 one panel hints that have been dropped in those 5 issues. It's like, come on. Like, that's the only reason to read this.
Right. Can we
please get to it?
I thought they were doing stuff in Flash, though.
Yeah, they are. They are. Hmm. They're doing it in both. The Speed books are basically, because they're time travel guys and parallel universe hoppers, that's, you know, how it always happens, so.
Right.
But, yeah, I'm ready for this story to be over.
Yeah. I need something different.
But I'm guessing this will go at least through 6.
6?
Yeah.
Oh, good grief.
Because they're
end already.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
All right. Was that it for you on DC then?
I got one.
You read Future Quest?
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to. Unless, Tim, you got something else? Or?
I'm done.
Okay. So, Future Quest. We have a new Mitor, and it is the young kid named Ty that has been following, been running along with Johnny and Haji and those folks. And we catch this in the middle of in the battle after he gets his powers because, you know, there's a bunch of dinosaurs trying to trample the various teams that are looking for, that were looking for this. I almost got that cover, but I chose it not to. But anyway, so yeah, in this midst of this big battle, Mitor is kind of around doing his thing, fighting the dinosaurs, as does Birdman, who doesn't do so well in the beginning. There's Jezebel Jade's there, and she's was initially there to get whatever fossil, but since Ty ends up being the one to get that fossil and get the powers, that's no longer on the table. So she tries to kidnap Dr. Quest, which she ends up doing. During the course of the battle, Agent somebody gets a call from the Impossibles, to which we will find out in a second what that was about, and then we get a little bit more about Dr. Zen and you know, what his plans are. And I believe that was it for that part. Then there was the Impossibles backup, which takes them after last issue fighting or starting to fight this, I don't know what they call him in that universe, but he's a power person that came out of the same project that the Impossibles got ended up getting their powers from, which was the same project that Fear is doing to kind of power people up and rule the world. At first we see a battle, and then the guy called Cobalt, which is the person they're fighting, is trying to recruit them for Fear, because supposedly they weren't supposed to have their powers, but they just happened to be in the right place and right time. We see a little backstory into a little bit more about around the time that they got their powers and what Fear was doing with that project. And then after that, we get to the part where they're fighting, but they're not sure what to do. So they're doing Impossibles are kind of running, and they try to call Agent Samedi, who, again, as we saw, was busy with the battle, you know, that I previously said. The Impossibles get some help from their TV writer. So basically in this universe, they are TV stars, but they use their powers in secret, you know, to for special effects on the show, but nobody knows this but them. But they're still on set when all of this goes down with this other character. So they run on set, talk to the writers of the show about how to defeat the guy they were fighting. And the next thing we see is them going through the motions of doing that while the writers are talking, which was weird because, like I said, no one knows that they actually have the powers. They think they're like special effects, unless these writers actually know something. But they're right here when the battle is happening, you know, telling them what to do, and then they're doing it, and they take down the bad guy, and then they end up treating it like it was a stunt for the show. Or at least the writers do anyway. But no one was around and was didn't seem to be recording at the time. But at the end of that little backup, we get to see that the newest member of the Impossibles get officially brought into the fold, which is this young lady named, I can't remember what her code name is. Wait, Cobalt is the leader's name. They were fighting a dude named Carbon. So it was weird. And that's the end of that. But like I said, I am still enjoying this book because it's a neat take on all of these characters, you know. So it's quite an enjoyable crossover, I think, for not being an actual crossover.
Oh, there was one I did forget, Detective Comics 943.
I wondered if you'd read that.
Yeah. I liked it. It was a start of a new story where, what do you call it? The something syndicate?
The victim.
I want to say vigilante, but I'm thinking vigilante Southland. They're in town. It starts with Batwoman and Renee Montoya investigating something weird happening at one of Wayne... Is it
Wayne Tower?
I'm not sure if it's, is it Wayne Tower? Okay. But we get to see the reintroduction of Luke Fox. The team needs a new IT person. He's sort of good with tech, so he could be a new member on this Team Batman book. They also show Stephanie, the spoiler, recovering or trying to deal with the loss of Tim Drake. What is happening? They show General... Is it General Kane? Kate's dad, they show him being helped by Batman, and Batman trying to get some answers from him. Of course, that doesn't really go well, but looks like at least a good start to this new story arc.
Yeah, I don't know. I just the one thing is I still don't really understand why there's this team. Like it just feels like that hasn't really been explained very well. Mm-hmm. You just get kind of these ethereal comments about how, you know, Batman can't do it all and he needs to, you know, train others, whatever, but, you know, why Clayface? Why Spoiler? Why Orphan? Other than the fact that these are all, like, outcast characters from Batman comics over the last decade, you know? You need to find some vehicle to put them in, but it's not really explained storyline-wise why they're all there, so that's the one thing I keep hoping that they're going to do something with, and it seems like they never do. You just have to accept that, oh yeah, well, you know, everybody likes Clayface now, even though he's a villain for a long time, and it's okay, you know. And I guess you're introducing a new team of villains, but you don't have any clues, you don't have anything to go on. It's just, hey, a bunch of random people show up, and now you have to worry about it. So I just feel like there's so many like big empty holes in this story. I need it to flesh in more. I just don't really feel it, you know.
Mm-hmm. I guess they explained it. Batman formed a team because all the members were being watched by whatever that evil group that Kane was running.
Well, yeah, but even then, but you know, why? I mean, and then why make them into a team? Why not instead just put cameras in their house and put trackers on them. You know, I mean, it's.
Yeah, I always liked the thought of a team Batman book. You know, like I see, used to run the Outsiders, but having a team book that's focusing on the different vigilantes in Gotham. I'm always a sucker for team books, so. Hmm. And then one put in Batman's world, I'm like, hey.
I'll read it. All right.
All right. Well, I've got, I guess, four other DC books I'll run through kind of quickly. But we had Flash. And this is what you're seeing is more or less what happens in this book. We have two kid Flashes running around, or if you want two Flashes and one kid Flash, however you want to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting Barry is now starting to get pulled into the Speed Force. He's the one that needs an anchor this time around, because he's not with Iris, you know, in this version. He's dating someone else, and he had a girlfriend, and she was killed, and, you know, so he doesn't have that to pull him through. So now both Wallys have to pull him and anchor him back in, and he gets a glimpse of, you know, that someone has messed with the time stream and that there's more to the story that they don't understand, and he gets the clue of this shiny metal helmet with these little wings on the side of it, which we all know is the Jay Garrick original Flash helmet. But part of this book is the idea of these two Wallys coming together, and the original Wally won't tell the new Wally what his real name is or where he's from or, you know, any of that history, because he doesn't want to freak him out and basically say, well, you know, I'm you from another universe, even though I'm a different race and different family and different background. Apparently we're the same now. And, you know, it's just a little too freaky to throw on somebody out of nowhere. So he's keeping his history hidden from the other Wally, which I know is going to play out at some point. You're going to see the truth come out, and there's going to be a giant freak out, you know, and everything. But they're doing a good job of building the camaraderie between all three of them and making it feel. One thing that they did, I remember in the 90s with Flash, is everybody who was using the Speed Force, they could feel each other, basically. Like, whenever someone was using the Speed Force, they could feel it, and it made them kind of like a family, in a sense. You know, they knew who it was and you know, what they were doing through the Speed Force, and they're rebuilding that idea, that they're all interconnected because of that Speed Force. You know, I hope it's not building up for the sake of blowing them apart, you know, at some point down the road, right, which tends to happen. But I do feel like we're getting some good character building. The one thing, though, on this particular issue, I didn't really care for the artwork. It's very exaggerated. Almost has like a Joe Staton type feel to it, if you remember his style being very cartoony.
Okay.
And, you know, when you have people running, you have a lot of knees and elbows bent as they're doing like the running things, but these are like super exaggerated, almost you know, like Spider-Man crazy with arms and legs flailing off to the sides while they're running. It's more like they just slipped on ice, you know, than they're actually running. So it's a little weird, but otherwise I thought it was a good solid issue, and I like the idea of the Jay Garrick still being out there somewhere in his World War One helmet with his little wings on the side. Let's see, jumping along, we will go to Blue Beetle, which I'm probably going to end up dropping. It's just not doing really anything for me. It seems like every time they start to build his friends as being the characters, they focus on his friends being part of this team, of this group, of this you know, social circle. They're going to be the you know, the second tier subplots going on, and then in this issue, they basically drop him completely for this other group of kids. Mm-hmm. It was just like a really weird. I don't know. Just felt really out of place. Ted Kord in this book is just, he's not, I don't know. It's not that he just seems very bland. Like, the only thing he has going for him is that he's rich and he's happy.
Oh, I was about to say, because he's the OG, he's the original.
But he's really not. In this universe, it looks like he was never actually Blue Beetle.
Wow.
Okay. This guy, Jaime, became Blue Beetle, and Ted Kord is just sponsoring him and building technology for him to help him along, because he desperately wants to be around heroes and do something good, but not actually be a hero.
Gotcha.
So, and there's stuff going on with like his mom. She's a doctor, and apparently she's giving medical help to these super powered gang guys because she runs a clinic, and, you know, everybody needs help. And of course this, you know, freaks him out, and you got to stop doing that, mom, you're not a hero, and blah, 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 blah. And I don't know, just, it was a really weak point of tension between the family that just, it didn't build to anything. It actually built to a confrontation that was like immediately diffused.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, why did we even spend time, you know, building this thing if you're just going to drop it immediately? So just overall, just not real happy with the book and the direction. And, you know, I'm just going to let it go at this point. We do have Deathstroke. And this, okay, so last month or last or 2 weeks ago, whatever, we were talking about the setup with Batman. And this is continuing that storyline and playing it out. And we talked before about Deathstroke and Batman one-upping each other,
mm-hmm.
And outthinking each other. And this continues that trend. Like, it's even going on further in here where they keep trying to outthink each other and be one step ahead of each other. Robin plays a hilarious role in this. He's basically being tortured to death by Deathstroke, allegedly, to get information. But, of course, he knows that Deathstroke's not actually going to do anything to him. And so he's just ribbing him and giving him back talk, sass, I guess you could say.
Okay.
So having Robin sass Deathstroke as Deathstroke's apparently trying to kill him just made for some really funny interactions between them. I enjoyed it a lot. The artwork was great. The story was a lot of fun. You know, Batman at one point, he's just like, I don't have time for these games. I'm just going to do what I always do, and you can follow me or whatever. And you think that he's leading them off somewhere, but no, sure enough, Batman's just like driving the Batmobile, and he just kind of hops out, goes up on a rooftop. You hear like bang, bang, thud, and this like duffel bag comes falling off the top of the roof with you know, the money or the stolen goods or whatever. And mm-hmm. Batman just hops in the car and keeps driving. That's it. You know, he's doing his thing. You're just along for the ride. He's refusing to play the game. So it was just fun to see how they played each other with that. So I'm enjoying this book a lot. If there wasn't a Vision out this week, this was a good contender for actually Click of the Week.
Nice.
It was a lot of fun. We've got Action Comics, which continues the story of Lois Lane taking over the life of the dead Lois Lane of this universe. Continuing on with some of the, I guess, mysteries, you could say, that she was trying to unfold in their universe. She's trying to figure out Lex Luthor. I mean, really is one of the things that is seems like a key moment in this book is that Lois... you know, there's something different about Lex in this universe, and that's something that we've seen in the New 52 is that Lex actually became a member of the Justice League, and he's been wearing that metallic Superman suit and, you know, running around as a superhero. And she, you know, she doesn't know what to make of it, really. They, you know, no one does, because in their universe, of course, Lex Luthor was the, you know, biggest villain that Superman, you know, always had to face. So they're trying to figure out what the deal is with that. So that's a good subplot that's running through the whole thing.
Did they explain how Clark Kent is still alive?
No, they haven't. That's one of those things that it's, you know, for now it's still a subplot that okay. people are still trying to figure it out. Lana Lang revealed herself as Superwoman to them. So now she's part of the, you know, super team, super family, whatever. But that's something that, you know, they actually discuss is that they have no idea who this Clark is because Lana Lang knew that Clark Kent was Superman, and she watched Superman die, and then she saw this Clark Kent guy appear after this other Superman, so she just assumed that they were somehow connected, and he's like, no, I've got no idea who this guy is either. So it's doing a good job of you know, putting all those threads through the storyline and building on them. There's no real, you know, resolution to anything in this particular issue other than Lois is firmly now implanted in the life of the other Lois that's died. But all those other threads are still weaving throughout, and it's just building, hopefully, to something good. But you can just tell that, you know, at this point it's building, and it's a lot of fun to see how all that stuff's working out. And actually, there's one more book I forgot about until I started looking through all this stuff, and this is Frostbite number 2. This is a Vertigo book, similar to Winterworld that came out earlier this year, or maybe it was last year. Earth in the future is covered with snow and ice. Everything's cold. And there's a disease called frostbite, and people who get it slowly freeze to death from the inside out. And somehow it's a communicable disease, and no one's sure exactly how they get it or how it spread, whatever. But there's a doctor who they believe may have information on the cure, and so this ragtag group is helping to get this doctor cross-country to get to the medical facility so that she can finish her research and hopefully, you know, figure out how to solve frostbite and maybe fix, you know, whatever is going on in the world. And I read the first issue. I enjoyed it, but I wasn't really sure if I was going to stick with it, you know, how good it was going to be with the second issue. The second issue is also really good. Again, this is another possible contender for Click of the Week if Vision hadn't come out. It's doing a good job of world building. It feels consistent, like they actually have a good storyline idea going on with this. This feels like it could be the next Why the Last Man, or, you know, one of those type books. Even, you know, Walking Dead in a sense, right. Like a post-apocalyptic. It's like a Mad Max book, except instead of desert, it's ice and snow. And it just feels like it's really well thought out and really well built. And so I enjoyed this a lot more than I expected I would, because a lot of times they fizzle out with the second issue. They get right. bogged down in a lot of stuff, and it, you know, feels like something completely different from the first issue. This one feels consistent. So I have a good feeling on it, so I plan on sticking with this one. Looks pretty good. So that's going to do it for DC.
And you had one more already, right?
Not for DC, no.
Well, do you have anything?
Yeah, I mean, we can go rapid fire since
we're we can rapid fire it.
In that case, I got like three. Star Wars 24. So our crew didn't exactly think they're playing through it, it seems to me, because they hijacked the Star Destroyer, got a skeleton crew, and with the intent of going to this planet to help with some issues there. They are boarded by Sergeant Creel, who we have seen in, who we last saw, well, in the standalone issue where they were talking about him, but we also know him from Nar Shaddaa, where he was working for Grokka the Hutt. His stormtrooper crew comes in, kind of tries to take back the Star Destroyer, end up fighting Luke and Sana and everybody, you know, everybody on board, and at the same time they enter the planet space where they're trying to go. So there's that. So Luke and Krill's fighting, and then everybody else is fighting, and then they start the mission to help the planet with, you know, Han is at the helm and Leia's up on the bridge and whatnot. But then we have a all too familiar villain whose book just ended, happens to come along on the last page and is going to cause some troubles in the next issue. I don't know. It was a pretty decent read, though. Like I said, we get a little bit more. We don't get much on Creel, but you know, we know which we've already known where he came from. But Luke's just finally come across him again. So. Poe Dameron number 7. Poe gets this message from an old Navy friend of his and meets her on this planet because she says she has some information about the First Order. She kind of already knows he's working for the Resistance, but she tries to play it off not quite well because she's an investigative reporter now, and one, she knows him also, and the fact that she's an investigative reporter. So they get into some hijinks and get chased through this planet. They end up back on the Rebel base. And by the way, this is, if you didn't know, Poe Dameron's book is set like right before Force Awakens, so this is that time period. Poe takes his friend to meet General Organa, Leia, and comes to find out that she necessarily didn't have any information on the Force Order, but she wanted to basically get a story on the Resistance and by any means necessary. So everything that was going on the planet was kind of her doing until she actually got to the Rebel base and realizes like the story wasn't worth it. And now she wants to join the Resistance. And that's where that book ends up. Silver Surfer number 7, which is my last one. Anybody else read this one? Yes.
No, sorry.
You would be the one. Yeah, usually. So after the events of last issue, Noran's feeling kind of bad because, you know, he's always getting, you know, Dawn in trouble or hurt or, you know, causes some issues. So he starts taking her to like safe planets. So he ends up going to a planet where there's basically a giant nursery. They go to a couple other planets that are real safe until Dawn kind of recognizes why he's doing that and says, hey, you know what? I chose to be out here with you. So, you know, I'm willing to take the risks. So they end up going to this dimension or other reality, whatever you want to call it, that's pretty much a big-ass casino, which is run by the Grandmaster. And the Grandmaster sees them here, and there's a little funny part with Mephisto early on when they first get there that the Surfer just had a big chuckle about. But they end up gambling, and start gambling so much to where, you know, they start to kind of lose it. Most specifically, the Surfer does, because he bets his board and loses it, but he still thinks he could get it back, you know, and part of this was kind of set up by the Grandmaster because he wanted to engage the Surfer. Then Grandmaster and Surfer ends up, you know, after after he and the Surfer and Dawn kind of starts losing a whole bunch of stuff, the Grandmaster kind of comes in and say, hey, I'll play you for whatever else you got. And then they do that, and that ends, and we have pretty much the end of that story. You kind of know how it ends, I guess, if you read on through it. But there's also this other character that's been following Dawn and the Surfer. I don't know where this person came from, but it looks like this might have been the first time this came up. And you can't see him. He's not like a watcher or anything, but it's kind of somebody just saying that, hey, I've been watching you for a while, and you know, you think you've been risking a whole lot of stuff, and you've lost everything, but you don't know you have so much to lose. And that's where the issue ends there, because apparently that's, you know, foreshadowing something. And that's it.
Cool.
Clicks of the week.
Man.
This
would have been so much easier if one.
Yeah, that was mine. Turns got mine.
This Turns got easier mine. If one of the yeah. This
Turns got mine.
Easier.
If I thought it was cool. I thought Vision 12 was fine. It didn't, you know, knock my socks off that much.
You heartless.
And I'm a Tom King fan.
That's how we are.
But I'm gonna have to go with New Avengers number 17.
I see why. I definitely understand why, because there's so much revealed, so much, you know, like as the penultimate issue of the series, they almost like they use this issue to really wrap a lot of the major dangling plot lines.
Right.
You know, with that one issue left, it's like, all right, you know, we'll wrap up the story in that one or move on to the next, I guess, the U.S. Avengers. So,
yeah. So everyone else is going with Vision 12?
No. First of all, I would like to give a shout-out to Wolf Cop number 1. I don't know if you can see it, because the screen share is different, and so apparently not.
We just see black screen for
you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they changed the screen share, and it's not popping up the page, so it's all good. But I'm thinking...
Oh, there it is. Aha, found it.
There we go.
Yay!
Wolf Cop.
Wolf yeah. Cop!
I read the little thing on this, and I'm like, okay, that seems campy and dumb. I'm kind of looking forward to checking that out. But... I think I'm going to go with Ms. Marvel number 12. Because I loved Vision, but or I like Vision a lot, I should say. But I think Ms. Marvel kind of hit it out of the park for me.
Understood.
That'll work.
Yeah. Can I throw out something else real quick?
Yes.
The Art of Atari came out this week. And let me just say this nice, thick hardcover.
I love that book.
It's more than just... the artwork from the packaging. There are interviews with people who work there in the art department talking about what it was like to work there. They talk about the industrial design that went into a lot of the console and the controllers and, you know, the history of everything that they did, the advertising. Another great thing that's in this book is they do little screenshots of the book along with the artwork. So that kind of show you, you know, how it was marketed and then how the game actually looked.
Mm-hmm.
So you can compare, you know, a lot of the early ones where they had these fantastic pieces of artwork and then it was, you know, nothing like what the actual game looked like. So you can see that. But, you know, I found it really interesting. They talk about, like, how they designed the logo, the different ideas that went into it. And you can see, I was hoping I could find it real quick and throw it. Here we go. Like, all along here are different logo ideas that they were going for.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got, like, the different, you know, how Atari actually turned into... I'm doing this backwards. I'm looking at the camera, and I'm trying to move my hand, and it's not. But you can see how it developed until it finally got there. But, you know, this is much more a piece of history. You know, it talks about the DC comic book in here. It talks about the market crash. It talks about the Jaguar... you even get some handy index pages in the back, so if you're looking for a specific game or an interview with a specific employee or something, you can find it in there. They talk about, you know, not only doing the artwork for the ET box and how they didn't have any promotional images to work from, but also the game itself, the programmer talking about how hard it was to develop the game as quickly as he did, and then they talk about the impact of the game and, you know, how it wrecked the industry, more or less. So there's a lot to this. Even though it's called The Art of Atari, it's, you know, it's a history, it's a industrial design, it's promotion, it's advertising, it's, you know, everything going back to even Space War and Pong and stuff like that before the consoles came out. So anyone, if you're a fan of retro games, this is definitely a great book to get. It can be a little pricey, so check around on Amazon, get your good deal from there. But it's, I mean, it's big, it's heavy, it's thick, beautiful, full color. So definitely, I love this book. I love this book so much.
I'm looking forward to that book coming out, and that's totally cool. Forgot that it was actually out, so I'm going to have to grab that.
This is also a great thing to ask for Christmas. And even though it's the one thing I find most amusing about it is it looks almost exactly like the He-Man books that have been coming out recently, the Filmation Guide and the mini comics and all that. But this is from Dynamite, not Dark Horse. So don't think that it's from Dark Horse because it looks exactly the same as those other books. It's actually from Dynamite, but fantastic book. So everybody should check it out.
Cool.
Well, since we're here, can we do an unboxing before we get to the news?
Why not?
Go for it.
Sweet. Unboxing time.
What are we unboxing?
We are unboxing a collector's core box, and as of course, as the themes go, this one is Doctor Strange in time with the movie.
That's right.
Here's the box, top of the box. A little bit of awesome facial hair, bro. going on right there. All right, so let's get into this. As we tend to do, we have a nice line art just going across it. I kind of want to do something with this stuff, but I'm not sure what. Like, I'm probably won't be taking this out and putting it on a wall, but regardless. We have this pin that just fell out, which is a collector's core pin.
Oh, an Eye of Agamotto. Nice.
We have this patch.
Okay.
This is Doctor Strange patch for those not watching the video, which you should be.
Oh, Doctor Strange.
Let's see. Going into the box, we have... well, I guess we found out that the next box is going to be X-Men related.
Okay.
So, because they've been doing that lately. We have this... great. Variant cover of Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supreme, which meant that I probably didn't have to buy the copy that I ended up getting. That's great. Oh, which, by the way, and I should probably, while I'm thinking about it, another Doctor Strange book came out this week. Doctor Strange, Mystic Arcana, Mystic Apprentice. Which seems to be a lot of backstory. Well, some backstory just in time for the movie. Mm-hmm. It might be too late to do this now, but probably tomorrow I have a digital code I'll be tweeting out. So look for that sometime. Anyway, so we have a shirt, as we tend to do sometimes, and it's backwards, which looks like the same.
That's actually pretty cool. Yeah. A Funko Doctor Strange.
Yeah, that's a cool shirt. So we'll be rocking that. And... we have two more things. Oh, nice. We have Doctor Strange mug.
Oh, that's cool.
With a little Funko thing. Again, awesome facial hair bros. Check that out. And last but not least, we have this. I'm going to assume this is translucent, but we have a gold looking, I guess this is Astral Form Doctor Strange.
Yeah, Astral Form Doctor Strange. There is Marvel Legends. In the new Marvel Legends line, there's an Astral Form Doctor Strange from the movie version.
Yep, and as we can see on the back, there's a bunch of the what's going to be in this line.
Cool.
So look for that in your stores. And, of course, in the bottom of the box, we have more line art with the Eye of Agamotto on all sides of it. And, yep, that's it.
Cool. Before we hit the ad and move on to the news. Dirt, I wanted to ask, has your shop received or did anyone order some of the latest Batman the Animated Series toy stuff, like the Bat Signal with like Batman and Robin and the Batmobile?
The Batmobile, yes.
I actually happened to get a good deal on the Batmobile, the Batman Robin and Bat Signal set. It's up on my shelf. I'm just going to tilt and get out of the way. You can probably see some of it up there for viewers on YouTube. It's a little bit on the unwieldy side. The Batmobile is huge, but it is very cool, and it does have like working lights. If you switch the on switch on, you have like brake lights and like little yellow, what I would call hazard lights, but they're supposed to be headlights. And the Bat Signal is pretty cool, too.
So, I might do something with that next week, or the 2 weeks from now, and just take that off the shelf. But since we were doing a bit of an unboxing, figured I'll just bring that down shortly before I rotate it out and display something else. So let's move on to the ad. And we're going to ask that you help keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, or stuff that we kind of mention here on the show. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today.
All right, let's get into the cinematic news of the week. Star Wars The Force Awakens got help from Ava DuVernay for a pivotal scene. And you can find that out in the commentary track for the special 3D Collector's Edition Blu-ray that will be released next month. Donald Glover is cast as young Lando Calrissian in upcoming Han Solo Star Wars standalone film. Congrats to him. Avengers Infinity War will help establish Marvel's Illuminati.
Illuminati!
Except for the fact that they don't have half of the characters. But
yeah, you know, what are you going to do? They'll bring in Namor, maybe.
Yeah.
They can use all those smarty pants Marvel characters that have already been introduced.
Right.
Maybe get Hank Pym in there.
Right. That's a good point. And they'll probably put Banner in there, maybe.
Yeah. Tilda Swinton wants to make a
Doctor Strange. Because if he's going to be in Ragnarok, they probably shipped him off, like Planet Hulk style.
No, we'll see how that plays out. But the point is... Yeah.
Tilda Swinton wants to make a Doctor Strange spinoff about the Ancient One. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Sure.
Doctor Strange's Benedict Wong possibly confirmed for Avengers Infinity War.
So this article says that he's confirmed. The title says he's confirmed, but in the article, he basically says kind of hems and haws. Looks like he hems and haws.
Because he's not trying to get shot by the Marvel snipers.
Yeah.
he's not trying to get shot by the Marvel snipers. So...
Director Tim Miller quits Deadpool 2 over issues with Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds being a diva again.
Creative differences of them.
Well, actually, the article that I read said something where Ryan Reynolds wanted to keep it silly and campy like the first one, and they were trying to push to make it more action. You know, now that they have a bigger budget, you know, have it be a bigger action movie. And he's trying to say, no, keep it more the screwball comedy with superheroes.
It was that plus the fact that Tim Miller wanted
to play Cable.
Yeah. He wanted to do it from Friday Night Lights to play, you know, play Cable, and Ryan Reynolds wasn't with that.
Okay. Many theories.
Yeah.
So a reason was given why Flashpoint only lasted one episode on the CW's Flash series.
What was the reason?
Tim has to click the article.
No, Roddy's got it nicely.
Summarize.
Series producer Todd Hilbings told comicbook.com.
It felt like a bunch of blah, blah, blah.
I think anytime you do a story like Flashpoint, something as iconic as that, with the character restrictions that we had, it's going to be different than everybody expected. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, all right.
Love excuses.
All right.
Mark Guggenheim reveals the title of Arrow's 100th episode. It is Invasion with an exclamation mark. As it's a part of the four show crossover Invasion storyline. All the shows that week, I think, have the title Invasion.
So I saw that and I thought Justice League, the last part of the first season.
So are you talking about Justice League or are you talking about Young Justice?
Or no, Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah. Ah. Yeah, that's what I was thinking about with Andrew and so on. But they talked about something else of a story that I don't know about. But anyway.
Okay.
Netflix original series Marvel's The Punisher announced its additional cast members, and it confirms that they're releasing in 2017.
Yeah, well, they're actively filming right now, so.
Can you hear them shooting at night?
No, but I've seen the signs. I've seen the no parking signs, and the working title for The Punisher is Crime. Oh. So on the signs, you know, that they put up that say, you know, no parking on such and such date, such and such time, I've seen crime posted on certain streets in Lower Manhattan, and I know that they're also filming in Long Island City in Queens. So
there you go.
By the way, Javits, it was written, I don't know why I'm thinking about this now, but Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, the Lego competition took place at Javits.
Right.
It is in Hell's Kitchen.
Yes. Javits is on the edge of Hell's Kitchen.
Oh, yeah, so I wanted to ask you if that was actually the
case. It is true.
Let's see. TV deal for Saints, the Image comic from Sean Lewis and Benjamin Mackey. Of course, everyone gets deals for their Image books. Mm. So this is going to be a Freeform series from the looks of it. Mm. Thor Ragnarok will include another cool Planet Hulk character. Someone named Meek.
Meek, Mike, I don't know. It's the bug-looking thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And in comic news, there's an early preview for Superpowers number one. Whoever that is. What is Superpowers?
It's basically the Art and Franco type of book. Yeah.
Got it.
The same folks.
Steve Dillon, the co-creator of Preacher, dies at the age of 54.
Oh, rest in peace, Steve Dillon. That was awful, awful news to hear.
Yes. Very young still.
Yeah, absolutely. And still active and still producing comics. And that's what that's one of the hardest things to take about this is that, you know, the guy is on the current Punisher book.
Yep.
I actually made sure to pick up when I went to the shop this past Wednesday. Issue number 6 is the most recent issue of Punisher. I don't know how many more he might have in the hopper after this, but so I'm not sure if this is maybe the last published Punisher work that he'll have, but he might have work in number 7 or 8. I don't know what's been solicited for the next 2 months. I don't know if he's the artist on those, but it was just a very, very awful story. I don't know if they've published a cause of death, but way too young at 54.
And in lighter news, Disney is now doing Marvel superhero cruises.
Yeah, there's a 180.
So the cruise trips start in October. So this time next year, the Marvel Day at Sea cruise trips start in October 2017.
Would have been perfect to announce that last week after Mockingbird ended, since part of that was on a cruise ship.
Do you have any of that Mockingbird stuff on this with Chelsea King? Okay, good.
Oh, yeah. That's the last one. Okay, one of the last ones.
See, there was a bunch of Marvel teasers for post-resurrection with was it X-Men Gold and Blue Team.
Yeah, they got my blood pumping with that. I was like, oh, man, blue and gold again.
The X-Men fandom was very pleased.
Which I felt like we talked about that, even though it didn't come out until Friday, but I thought we kind of talked about, I think you were talking about, Tim, your love of blue and gold, and I think that might have been what that was. But yeah,
I think I tweeted about it. I don't think I actually brought it up on the show. Maybe I did. Yeah. I don't remember.
I mean, it's probably over the past 3 years, we've probably talked about it before, you know, like that era, that relaunch, you know, and the team makeups that were just really, I thought, well done making up the blue and gold teams.
But I'm going to try to closely follow once these books start coming out, and I'll be monitoring. Let's just say that.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, and then they talked about Cable, because I think Cable and the Blue and Gold stuff came out Friday.
So. Right, right. They did Generation X stuff, too, so yeah.
Right, yeah,
that's, about that's, that, one, that so. Was another one that got me happy.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see if it's good. A groundbreaking female comic book store owner now appears on a Marvel cover, that being Ariel Johnson on the cover of Invincible Iron Man number 1.
Nice.
Yep. Yeah, that's a cool-looking cover, too.
And the comic book community stands with Mockingbird writer over feminist cover hate. That was a thing this week.
It was real sad too.
Yeah, I didn't catch up to this stuff until today. I actually had some time to peruse social media today, in between things, and I was kind of shocked to see this. I've been kind of off the grid, and when I saw all of this, I was kind of taken aback, to be honest.
The weird thing about it was, like, Mockingbird came out last week, but this kind of started like a couple of days ago, and I'm sitting here like, well, probably even yesterday, I don't remember, but I'm like,
yeah, like, was it like a gradual thing, or did it just sort of accumulate all in one day, and Chelsea King decided to quit Twitter because she was tired of catching all the hate?
She might have been catching it like since it came out, but I think it just kind of came to a head in the last couple of days.
I think she just made it public with the harassing comments she was starting to get.
Yeah.
Which is funny that you harassed a writer for a comic book cover that she didn't do the art for.
Yeah, right. But I guess the storyline also, you know, like for whatever
reason. They always got the art, the writer first, so.
Unreal.
The headliners.
Ease up, fanboys.
Yeah, quit being so damn stupid.
Yes, sir. And with that, we have reached the end of the episode. So,
yay! Hold on. More than... That gives me a chance to pull up an ad.
Right. That's right.
I was covering myself. So, let me tell you about Skull Candy. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now, for the listeners of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcasts Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner, and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skull Candy Audio through cspn.us. Do it today.
Oh, since everyone was showing off things earlier tonight, I guess I can show you something I got this evening
mail. Go, Tim.
a poster for one of the Kickstarters I supported.
Oh, nice.
The Supernatural Kickstarter.
That's cool.
So I got to find a nice frame to get that put in. And just a friendly reminder that more than likely there won't be a show next week because we'll be busy watching Doctor Strange.
The show might be the next day.
Movie protocols are in effect.
Exactly.
Actually, I won't be around that night. I won't be around next Friday through the weekend. So.
Okay. All right. So we may have to postpone the show. It sounds like we're all like everyone's schedule's getting tied up. I'm not sure when we're going to have our Treasury Edition for Luke Cage, and we may fold in a lot of the movie stuff and other stuff with that as well. We'll see how that goes.
Right.
And since we're announcing stuff, let me say real quick that on... Speaking of next week, on the 5th and this probably the 6th, I know for the 5th for certain for me, I and a friend of mine, CatMar77 on Twitter, will be both doing Extra Life this year. She's going to do 12 hours on Saturday and Sunday. I know I'm doing 12 hours Saturday night, and I might do Sunday night also. I haven't really decided that one. But you know what? We will be announcing that on Twitter. Come by. You know, it's for the kids. Check it out. It'll be on Twitch. My account is twitch.tv/SirCatRodimus. Find it on my Twitter. You can when I go live, whatever, and we'll go from there.
Well, as long as we're all announcing, my album drops on Tuesday. This is for my baby mama. One love. Peace out.
Make sure to go to popculturenetwork.com to find that album.
That's right.
It's the best ukulele folk music you've ever heard.
There you go. So make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBCron. PCN Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And check out his Vine comic book reviews.
Yeah, until Vine goes away.
That's
what?
Right.
What?
Yep. I can't believe I didn't think of that all day.
Wait. I need to put a stopper on the show closing. But what?
Yeah, Vine's going away in a couple months.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I read a whole bunch of stuff, you know, today, of course, because I've invested so much time in Vine this year.
You're like the record holder for comic book reviews.
I hit 100,000 loops this past week, so that was pretty cool. But so Twitter was originally imagined as a social status update, and it became more of an information network, which caused Twitter to change all their metrics and all their, you know, planning for the future. Vine was originally meant to be a social network with short video clips left back and forth. Basically, the idea was you would read your tweet out loud. You know, it was 6 seconds. You'd just be like, hey, I'm off to the store. See you later. You know, whatever, like people would do on Twitter. But instead of it being people sharing videos with each other, it became an entertainment platform with people who would create content for other people to consume in mass, and that threw off all of their metrics and their planning.
And then people started doing like longer form videos, and therefore Periscope and all that other stuff started coming through.
Right. So now Twitter and Vine, neither one ended up being what they thought they were going to be. So all the long term plans were wrong, and they've had to shift focus to different things. And they've finally reached the point where they realize that they just can't focus on getting Twitter what they need it to be while they're also focusing on Vine. So they're actually going to discontinue the mobile app. The website will still be up for the foreseeable future, so at least the content is there. They said at some point in the future they'll make all the content downloadable for the creators so we can go in and save our files. But, you know, at some point here, they didn't say exactly when, but at some point the app is just going to stop working, and that's going to be the end of new content on Vine.
And it was worth noting that Periscope is also Twitter, so that is still going on. But again, that is also a longer form video, so that is actually live.
Yeah, and I was going to say, that was a live stream thing. And, you know, Google has been doing Hangouts for 3 years now, 4 years with live stream video. Periscope went live, was it the beginning of this summer? Periscope and Meerkat.
Must have been like a year almost, isn't it?
Was it last year?
I think last year.
Okay, and so then the beginning of this summer is when Facebook started doing live video. And for some reason, as soon as Facebook said live video, everyone's doing live video.
Yeah.
It's like they weren't doing it on Google Plus, they weren't doing it on Twitter, they weren't doing it on Meerkat, you know, but as soon as Facebook has it, everybody's doing it. So
yeah, and which is kind of the bad thing.
And unfortunately, everybody is doing it. It's like, you know, my grandma's like, oh, we're cooking dinner, here's my live stream video. Oh, come on.
We say that as we're doing our live stream
show. Exactly.
Hey, we were doing it before it was cool.
Exactly.
That's right.
We're still doing it as uncool as we can.
So follow PCN Dirt as he makes his way over to Snapchat.
Hey, I was getting exactly.
I may start using Facebook Live at some point, at least the Click Nation page, some live comic book content or something.
You trying to use Snapchat for like, especially like on Wednesdays, you know, like Snapchat and poll or something like that, but I don't know.
That's not a bad idea.
Well, have they changed Snapchat? Because it used to be that you throw the video up and then disappeared after a while.
It still disappears.
Yeah, but they got like stories that would stay a little longer. Just like stays
that's why I never understand. I don't understand Snapchat. It disappears. So what's the point in creating something?
Because the point is to send
the youngest of all of us. So that doesn't say something well.
I mean, the whole point of Snapchat is to send the most vile, offensive things you can to your friends because you know it's going to disappear quickly.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I heard this joke. Don't tell anybody.
Yeah, we'll get people to pay for it and taking the stuff. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I still don't quite get it either. But
kids.
Yes. But and also follow at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need.
Indeed. And Instagram, CB, I forgot what the hell I'm CB Cap. Forgot my own damn account.
That's nice. I'm old. We're all going to be creating various spin-offs of the CB Cron accounts for all the social media networks that come and go.
Probably.
And Agent 70 is at Agent 70 on Twitter and Instagram. So with that, we'll more than likely be back in 2 weeks. We'll get you caught up on all the comments we've read.
Maybe I'll do a show by myself on Facebook Live.
Be on the lookout for that.
Let me know how to find you on Facebook.
Yeah.
No. I don't want people finding me on Facebook.
But you can go to facebook.com/theclicknation.
Can I post on there?
I can add you if you like.
Maybe.
Facebook, if we start going that route.
What was that?
Does this mean I have to start up for, if we go that route, that I have to sign up for Facebook?
I mean, you don't have to post it to a Facebook account.
No. I'm just saying if we end up switching over to that or some craziness.
We actually need to think about that.
Yeah, this will be part of our planning for 2017. And
I thought about that, like, you know, starting up a Twitch account in case, like, Hangouts goes away.
Yeah, Twitch is viable. Yeah.
Stuff to talk about after the show.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you know, it'll be recorded to YouTube anyway.
And with that, we are the Comic Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace. Peace.